In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Good. There we go.
There we go.
I forgot we're actually doing this.
What do you mean?
I knew you were coming over, but like in my head.
You thought we were just going to visit or something?
No, like this is like the time when you were supposed to show up early, and I still thought, I knew you were going to show up early, but I thought that you would show up. Remember when I wasn't ready the one time?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the same thing. Like, I know what's happening, and at the same time, in my head, that's not what's happening.
More Thursdays than not, we do this.
Most of them, yes. I don't know. I just, my head hasn't been, this week has been very weird. And today, especially, because I left work early to take Cat to the vet. And
oh, well, what's wrong with the cat?
He's really old.
Oh.
He's 19. So bits are falling off all over the place and stuff, but
well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he's still doing okay at the moment, but we'll see. All right, we should probably address the people.
Yes, we probably should.
Welcome, people, to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that apparently can forget it's happening even when it knows it's happening at the same time. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 66.
And we have Ezzy in a box over here.
Oh. Not that anybody knows that but us.
That's why I told them.
Oh, well, otherwise that was nice of you, so that they would know.
Yes. Ezzy's getting curious about everything in the world, like she likes to do when we record. I don't understand it. I think not a lot of people sit here the rest of the time.
She doesn't always. A lot of times she doesn't come.
Yeah, but it's becoming a thing. And I think not often do people sit here when we're not recording.
Oh, I see.
So when we do, she's like, why are you guys over here?
Yeah, what's
like,
so interesting about this place? I need to find out.
For those of you new to us, this is a podcast where we found a magic hat that has its own email. People email it, and we pull the questions out and talk about them.
It's pretty amazing, actually.
Magical.
I mean, we take it for granted now, 66 episodes in, but
so
it's...
So much. Ah!
It's pretty cool.
I kind of deserved that, but still.
What did you do to her?
I rubbed her belly, and she bit me really hard. I didn't think she'd move that far that fast. Hey! Okay, I don't deserve getting hit in the head repeatedly with your tail.
She's standing on him
Go
and, like,
somewhere.
Wagging her tail and hitting him right in the face. It's hilarious.
Go do something else. Away.
She's not going to do that.
Anyway, well, we're in that situation again where we have to do two episodes.
Yes.
Because we're missing next week.
That's right.
Hopefully I'll get the right episodes in the right places done. But I had this brilliant plan, too, because normally we talk for 8 million years about how our weeks went. And then we hardly get to the hat. And when we have to do second episode, we have nothing new to talk about, so we just had.
Yeah,
had.
Right.
So I thought, idea, tell me how your week went.
Yes.
Now, okay. And for the next episode, I'll tell people how my week went, although it'll be a week late at that point, and then it'll sort of even out.
Okay.
So how was your week?
It was good. As you probably know, I put my first petition on change.org.
I did see that. You may have noted I didn't sign it.
Yeah, I did see that.
I'm not opposed to the idea. I'm not opposed to the idea within the petition. I am somewhat opposed to the idea of said petition. I don't know. I'm not sure I believe that that works. Or that that even should work.
I don't know what you mean.
That a bunch of people, let's be honest, clicking on a thing on change.org has any impact on the thing you're trying to
Of course it does. I mean, there's plenty of examples where it has. So I mean,
really?
Yeah, that's academic.
Online petitions, really?
Yes.
I need to see these.
I wasn't asking about that because I know myself that certain things have worked. What I was asking about was your suggestion that your question about whether or not it should work.
I don't know. I guess it becomes a numbers game, but I feel like, well, let's take the example. Explain that your petition, and we can use that as an example.
Oh, the petition that I entered on change.org is, it's addressed to Warner Brothers and Michael Goldenberg, who has been asked to pen the next Wonder Woman movie, to restore Wonder Woman as a feminist icon, you know, with the next film. And the reasoning I explain in the petition itself, you know, I'm basically talking about how young women today don't have a lot of, they're bombarded by a lot of media images that, you know, tell them they have to look a certain way, and they have to compete with women for certain things, and it would be nice if, you know, the Wonder Woman film, they have a kind of a unique opportunity to do something different, especially since part of Wonder Woman's story involves an island where only women live, you know, so you can present kind of a different way for women to live and for women to get along, and show this contrast between how these women live and how women in the quote-unquote world of men, as they call it in the mythos, live, and for Wonder Woman to be sort of a emissary between these two worlds and try to make things better for women, and to give young women a role model in the media that is a little different than a lot of the women they have to choose from now. So, you know, the petition is asking people who kind of agree with that notion to sign and you know, to sort of send a message to Warner Brothers and Michael Goldenberg to say, this is what we want. The reason I'm curious to know what you mean by, you know, whether or not it should work is because I often wonder that, too, depending on what the petition is. Like, some petitions are to the governor of a state, you know, and sometimes I feel like that issue pertains to that state. The people in that state really need to do something about this, and I'm not sure I don't know how comfortable I feel about a governor caving in to pressure from the internet, from people who might not even be from the United States, you know, to come up with something, you know, to change policy on particular things. Yeah. The reason that I started this petition is because I'm under the impression that sometimes the reason certain choices are made in storytelling, like with Wonder Woman, in a manner that's not particularly feminist, is because Warner Brothers or whoever's writing the script or whatever, they don't think there's an audience for this kind of thing, or they don't know that there are people out there who would go to this movie if it were more like this instead of more like that. So what I'm really hoping to achieve, I guess, is to send a message to DC and Warner Brothers that says, you know, you can make a film that maybe in your mind or in your understanding of, you know, doing your focus groups or whatever, you know, you've determined that fans want Wonder Woman to be a certain way, and it kind of follows a certain a stereotype of what comic book heroines are like. But maybe if enough people respond to this petition or sign it, they can get the idea that, wow, there's a whole untapped audience of people out there who would actually like it to be different. And maybe that we won't please this demographic that we typically target, but if the other demographic is just as large or larger, you know, or possesses more buying power or whatever, well, maybe it would be okay to market to them instead. You see what I'm saying?
I guess I do. And when you put it that way, I feel a little bit more inclined to sign, because what you described is definitely something I would love. Yeah. I feel like in general that decision would/should be made at the box office. And if people want that, then when a movie clearly isn't that, they should let them know by not going. And I feel it's disingenuous because if it's not that way, I, the other person you send it to, and probably you are all still going to go see that movie. If it's bad enough, we won't. But it can be a far cry from what you're talking about, and we'll still probably pay money to go see it.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's a little... I was thinking it in terms, again, of sort of a protest petition. But the way you describe of sort of trying to enlighten the filmmakers that there is a demographic of which they may not be aware.
Right. That, because I agree with you. The box office should determine this.
And I mean, if I'm living in a society where the vast majority of people are assholes and want something different in their Wonder Woman movie, like, I don't get to decide that for them.
No, that's right. But here's the thing. Let's say that I decide not to go for whatever reason. Let's say that anyone who signs a petition decides, you know what, I'm not going to go to a Wonder Woman movie that's not whatever. It's not going to matter. I mean, there's a...
Well, it does if they have enough...
No. Here's the point. The fact of the matter is, films, television, what have you, these days, with marketing research such that it is, they are very focused. People who make television, movies, products even, have come to the conclusion, and probably this is a fairer conclusion to arrive at, that, you know, you can't market to everybody. You can't be all things to all people. And the most efficient thing to do is to market just to those people who you think are going to respond most enthusiastically to what it is you have to sell.
Respond financially.
Yes. And if you are making a TV show or a movie, you can, unlike some products that are just what they are, you can actually tailor the television show or the movie a little bit more to fit whatever demographic you think is going to respond most enthusiastically monetarily. Now, why not, if it's a Wonder Woman film, why not put a lot of effort and resources into thinking of a way to appeal to women? Well, they might not realize that that if the Wonder Woman film appealed to women, that women would go 4 or 5 times the way this demographic would. You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So the point is that in our modern era, there's people market to very narrow groups of people. They don't even expect to get more than, I mean, they know just how many people they want to come out to see this, and it's not some significant portion of the entire population.
Yeah.
It's a significant portion of a limited, narrow population that they want to reach. And because their marketing focus is so narrow, they might not even realize that there's a whole other group of people who is every bit as significant in terms of numbers, every bit as significant in terms of how many times they would go back to the movie or how many people they would tell about the movie. And so it's very easy for filmmakers, TV show makers, and product producers to quite innocently, in some cases, totally miss whole groups that they could be reaching. And of course, if they decide to make this film the way they've been making a lot of other things in the past, which, and I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I admit that in the petition, that I don't know what their plan is. I'm just sort of guessing based on how things are going so far with like DC's New 52 and things like that,
yeah,
that they're probably going to go for the usual male, I don't know what it is, 16 to 35 demographic or whatever it is. And that the film could probably be very successful if they do that. And it's going to be, you know, successful monetarily, I mean. And they'll have success just like they have with Batman, and then they'll do the JLA thing, and everything will be great. And that's fine for them. And you know, if that were to happen, great. But what I'm saying here is that there might be an opportunity for them to make just as much money, maybe more, if they take a different route. Because you know, think about this. Not long ago, Titanic was still the record holder for, I don't know, opening weekend and all this other stuff.
Still never seen it. Still fiercely proud of that fact.
Okay. But
in fact, I'm so proud of it, I'm proud of the fact that I married someone who's never seen it.
Okay, but think about this for a second. Was was that the demographic that made Titanic? I mean, that male demographic between, I don't know, 14 and 35?
Absolutely.
They're not the ones who made that happen.
Love a good
No.
Sorry, spoiler alert. The boat sinks.
There was a female demographic who made that happen. And I don't know why people don't acknowledge that. If you can make a film that is deliberately aimed at a certain female demographic, I don't care what age group or cohort you want to use, and they will come out and see the movie. They will see it 8 times. They will tell all their friends about it, and it will make every bit as much money as the Avengers film did. And if money is all you care about as a studio, then why not? The only reason why not is because you either don't know they exist, or you do know they exist, but you think there's some magical formula to reaching them that you haven't figured out, when that's not even true. There isn't some magical formula. But, you know, look at, I don't know how recent this was, but did you hear that the Lego company came out with Legos specifically marketed to young girls, and they were pink and lavender and other colors.
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, it was horrible. And why did they even think that girls didn't like Legos, normal Legos, just the way they
are? No, I think I saw somebody had old advertisements for Legos that had girls and were targeted at girls that were really just normal.
Yeah. I mean, who told them that girls don't like Legos, and so you're going to have to do... I mean, I don't even know why they even thought that. So there's a lot of... And, you know, the ongoing debate about video games and women in video games and women playing video games and things like that. It's really not rocket science, you know. And frankly, what I'm suggesting about Wonder Woman, you don't even have to go that far to attract a female audience to the Wonder Woman film. I just think it would be nice for Wonder Woman to be the feminist icon she used to be. She was created to be.
Yeah.
I mean, William Marston created her for that, to be that, and she did achieve that status. I think Gloria Steinem even called her that, a feminist icon, at one time. I think when Gloria Steinem said that, she was objecting to a move back. I don't remember when this was exactly, but there was a time where DC decided to take away her powers, and she was just like a super spy.
Oh, okay.
For a period of time, and Gloria Steinem objected to that, but and I think rightly so. But see, here's the thing. Marston's original story with Wonder Woman was, Amazons, and so they were Greek or whatever. But his original story wasn't so much about them getting powers from the gods or because they were associated with the gods, but that any woman could become an Amazon and learn Amazon skills. I mean, they mostly came from mental discipline and things like that. Right now, New 52 is following the pattern that Wonder Woman has taken for a long time, and is delving more into the mythology, and they've changed her, Zeus is now her father, and, you know, she's dealing a lot with Greek mythological characters and so on. And see, this is, I don't think, the right direction if she's going to be, a feminist figure. I think that, well, for one thing, the more Greek they make her, the more white the Paradise Island becomes.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, if the island was a sanctuary for Amazons all over the world or something, then you could have women of color there, and it wouldn't be such a big deal. But certainly, I'm sure you realize that Paradise Island or Themyscira or whatever it's called, you know, has never been a place where, when you see it in images and comic books, where women of all shapes and sizes are represented. I mean, you know, it's only very few body types and usually exaggerated comic book type things. So, you know, I mean, Wonder Woman is a female superhero, and I suppose to that limited extent you could say she's feminist, but I mean, that could barely be called feminist these days.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be something more, something a little more substantial, and I put the things that I think would contribute to that in the petition, but...
Ezzy fancies herself a feminist icon.
Well, maybe she is.
I don't know that I agree, but she thinks so.
Well, anyway, I didn't mean to take up too much time talking about it, but it is...
And I think, it's a subject I think I'm passionate about. I'm fairly convinced. I think I'm probably going to sign the thing now. I'm very wary of petitions.
Well, I am too, usually.
And I tend to find a lot of them fairly sort of confrontational.
Yes.
And I did not give this one fair credence, which is bad, because you're William, so I should have known that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You might read it and object to
it. Well, no, like I said, I want what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. However, a petition that would come out and say, the way you're making movies is wrong, and you have to, like, you know, which is how I interpret something like this. Mm. But you, like genuinely trying to inform about a demographic, and literally, we're not, like, making up number. Here's the size, because we got people signing, who would like this.
Yeah,
and maybe you didn't realize. Like, no, I get that. I think I like that. I think I'll sign it. And we'll put a link to it, in the show.
Well, I'd appreciate that. We're up to 30 signatures now. It's been out there for a couple days, and signatures from people from like UK.
Mm.
I mean, from not just from the United States, people signing and people making some comments, which is nice.
I actually, I'm going to try and remember and let. There's somebody who doesn't normally listen to our podcast who I think would find this interesting, and so I got to remember to talk to them. And it worked so well last time because I let the Derby people know about our last episode. The Roller Derby, just so people know, Derby.
Sorry about that,
people.
Didn't mean to be so confusing.
We had a few from the team listen.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And actually, you and I got invited to go have a beer and talk with them. That did not pan out.
I didn't say anything offensive to them about. I mean,
no, I was worried about me, what I said. No, they thought it was really cool. And our knowledge of Derby was impressive, and they wanted to talk.
Oh, they thought so?
Yeah.
Huh.
And so, I mean,
I thought they'd think, you morons, you don't know what you're talking about, you idiots.
Yeah. No, they thought it was cool.
Oh. Well, that's nice. I'm glad.
Yeah, and so if you listen, I don't know that they'll continue listening to the show, but that was cool. And, yeah, I think I know somebody who is big into comics, big into Wonder Woman in particular, and I think she might find what you had to say interesting. So,
well, and a lot of people are happy with where Wonder Woman has been and where she's going, and that's fine. I don't, you know, I appreciate that, but I think that I don't know. I just think that well, here's another thing that 52 does that I'm not sure is going to be helpful. The new 52, I mean, you know, superhero movies ever since X-Men have been feeling like they got to be kind of realistic or, you know,
gritty and
try to be somewhat plausible kind of. I don't know how to describe it, but I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
X-Men did it kind of first, and then, you know, Batman, of course, Nolan's Batman kind of went that direction. And even, you know, Thor, you know, I mean, this was in accordance with the comic books, but they made sure they kind of suggested, well, look, the Germanic gods and goddesses were aliens or whatever. So do we really think a Wonder Woman film that where she is a demigoddess and she's dealing with the Greek gods and stuff is really going to excite, you know, people other than a small group of people? See, I don't think so. Now, the petition has nothing to do with that. The petition is all about specific feminist elements. I'm not saying anything about whether or not.
Well, that's a big enough thing to deal with it.
Right.
As from what I have heard, and I do not currently read comics, but from what I have heard regarding the new 52, apparently women are just getting shafted all over the place. I mean, even in the realm of women in comics, in which women already get shafted,
well,
it's been pretty ugly.
Certain titles, yes. I mean, my understanding, and I haven't read them all, but my understanding is Birds of Prey is actually okay. I haven't seen it, but that's what I've heard. And that Wonder Woman is, you know, is not too bad. I mean, there was the big debate about whether or not she should be wearing pants and all that stuff. But
no superhero should be wearing pants, ever.
but you know, and I saw some image. I actually haven't seen the Wonder Woman issue 1, 2, or 6 or however many there are now. I've seen some images from it, and you know, it looks like Wonder Woman. It doesn't. It's not really that different. The huge problems were in. I think there was there's a title, Red Hood and the Outlaws, or something like that. With is it Starfire?
I don't remember which.
I can't remember.
And of course, Catwoman.
Oh gosh, yes. Sorts.
But
yes,
Catwoman
yes.
always has.
Yeah, that was just horrible. So, but you know, it's all coming from DC. You know, I mean, you can't have a few titles be really awful and then a couple other titles that. Well, they're not awful, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all kind of comes the same, and come on, DC, you know, let's. And now you're going to make a Wonder Woman film, and any of us who would like to see not just a female superhero but a feminist icon are not feeling a lot of confidence that that's going to happen. And Michael Goldenberg, by the way, helped write. Well, we talked about this before. He helped write the last Green Lantern film, and you know,
that's not a good sign.
I don't think the portrayal of Carol Ferris was all that.
That's
great.
Forget feminist icon. That's not a good sign that it's going to be an anyway decent movie.
That reminds me. I want to say this before I forget. I think the person they've already decided who they want to write the JLA movie, and it's the guy who writes Castle.
Yeah, it's a guy who writes
okay.
Castle. Okay. Yeah, I think I saw that. But don't
how
get
strange.
The JLA movie is still really nebulous.
Can I
like. It's still not a done deal that's happening.
I know, but can I tell you a secret?
What?
Just between you and me and our listeners.
So, like, six people? Yeah.
I've got a whole plan for a Wonder Woman trilogy that leads into a JLA movie. And what the JLA movie would be about, some of the things that would happen in it. Oh.
Quick! Write it up. Send it in.
Well, send it to where? Yeah, exactly.
Wherever Seth Rogen sent his crap, I don't know. There's places.
No, seriously, I've got. And, you know, it's interesting.
Losers get movie deals all the time. Like,
how?
I don't know.
Well, if you tell me how, then I'll try. But the thing is, you know me, when I get something in my head, I have to do something with it. So I'm already writing a treatment for the first installment. And here's the deal. My plan is not just in the course of this Wonder Woman trilogy, the origin stories of several other female superheroes is told, and they're retold in a way that makes previously female heroes that were derived from male heroes stand alone. See, oh man,
that sounds hot.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's I get so excited about it, and as soon as I'm done with this, I'm sure I'll move on to the next. I'm pretty soon I'll have this whole thing of a Wonder Woman trilogy, and what am I going to do with it? Nothing.
You cannot use it. Yeah.
It's like, why do I even come up with this stuff? And I get so obsessed that I write it out, and it's like it doesn't matter. Nobody's going to listen to me. Nobody's going to care about what I'm saying.
Our listeners will listen to you. We will have when that happens. We will have like 20 episodes in a row that's just you reading from the script.
Well, here. The climax of the thing really in the JLA film is that when they get together,
Martian Manhunter's a chick.
No. First of all, the first JLA is going to be the Justice League of Amazons, because by the end of the trilogy, there's going to be Wonder Woman and there's going to be like six other female heroes again who once were male derivative heroes but now completely stand on their own, and they're going to be together and they're going to have a little group. And then in JLA, there's going to be a threat, you know, from outside the planet or whatever, because that's usually what you need for all these superheroes to get together. And then the men are going to come along and want to team up, and there's going to be a little resistance there. And they go, okay, fine, we'll be the JLA of whatever, called something else. But Wonder Woman will just assume control, and nobody will even question it. Except, I think I might want Flash to question it, just briefly.
I feel like Batman should question
it.
No. Because Batman's an asshole.
No. Flash will question it, but then Superman and Batman will both act like, why are you even questioning this? Because think about it. Superman is what? A Boy Scout and a reporter. You know, Green Lantern is just a galactic cop. You know, Batman knows nothing about any kind of warfare beyond, you know, urban tactical assaults or whatever. There's nobody in the JLA, as we know it even today, who's qualified to wage all-out warfare, except Wonder Woman. And yet, she's never been the leader of the JLA. So, in my version, she would just naturally assume control, and Superman and Batman would be okay with that, because they both know that she's the best qualified. And either there would be no conflict about it, she would just lead, or, you know, one of the minor characters would question it, and Superman and Batman would not even come to her defense. They would be like, well, what are you talking about? Of course she's going to lead. I mean, she's the only one that's ever been trained in warfare. Of course she's going to be the one. Because that makes the most sense. It's always made the most sense.
See, you've now taken it to a level of nerdery here. I kind of want to give you a wedgie. I kind of do.
I get excited thinking about it.
I can tell. Can't you... Oh, never mind. I don't. We're already a half hour. I don't want to encourage you. But the rest of you, feel free to encourage him on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and sign his friggin' petition, or he won't shut up.
Or discourage me, as the case may be.
No, that's my job. Don't anybody else discourage Every, him.
No, other
my
people job. Will do it if
my
they feel like
job.
It. They don't care if it's your job. They'll do
I
it
will,
anyway.
I will fight them.
Well, good luck with that.
But I'll let Wonder Woman lead. Ezzy, seriously, find a spot and stay there.
She should always have led it. She's the only person that makes sense. Why would Superman lead? Think about that. Why would he lead the JLA? I mean, he himself should know that I'm not qualified for this. And Batman should know better, too. Of course, I don't know if he's ever led it. Well, maybe he has.
I think Batman understanding is bullshit, and I think it has nothing to do with her being a woman. I don't think Batman follows people.
No, I know, but if he's there and if he's already agreed that they have to team up to do something, he's going to acknowledge that she's the best person for the job.
I don't think so. I think Batman always thinks he should lead.
No.
Batman seldom thinks he should hang out with other people, but if he does, he should be the leader.
All right, I follow it
Batman's
a little bit.
Batman's an asshole. You just can't come to terms
with that. I follow it a little bit. It's just...
I know you love Batman. Batman's an asshole.
Well, no, I know that. I don't have an objection to people saying that because that's part of his character, but...
being an asshole.
But he's also practical. I mean, he's not going to object to someone leading when they're obviously better qualified than anybody else to lead.
If he's practical, then he wouldn't dress up as a bat and fight crime because somebody shot his parents.
An argument could be made for the practicality of that approach.
He would use his billions of dollars to help the world much more than beating up purse snatchers on the street dressed as a bat.
Not debatable.
The world's best detective doesn't need a costume.
So says you.
Yes. Okay, anyway. And I'm not going to tell you about my week till next week. But for those of you who can't cope for a week, I will tell you, roller derby, we won.
Oh, good.
But the story's way more exciting than that.
Oh,
so,
well, good.
You'll hear more next week. All right, so hat?
Yep.
The hat should be a superhero.
What if our listeners are wondering, golly, how do I get pulled out of the hat? Or my comment or question, I should say.
Luck, because it's all random. But how you get in the hat in the first place is to write the hat. At themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Go and do that and give us a topic or question. Something brief, please, because the hat doesn't like to write a lot. And then we pull them out of the hat randomly and talk about them until we're bored.
Speaking of brief, Blood Sparrow says simply, apples.
Seriously, Blood Sparrow, we had an episode about apples. We had a whole freaking episode about Jesse Fuck It Hyatt. Seriously, it's become my dream now that, like, future generations will actually think Jesse Hyatt said that. That's become, like I've created my own folklore. My tall tale is that Jesse Hyatt is famous for saying, you know what? Fuck it. Let the tree grow.
I don't know apples, what else we can say apples.
About it. Oh, I know what I can say.
What's that?
I'm very excited about this. So, the producer, as some of you may know, cans everything.
Mm-hmm.
She puts everything in jars, except our cats, and she's been eyeing them lately. So we have a lot of canned fruits, canned vegetables, and as you would expect, lots of jams. Lots of jams and preserves and jellies and things. We have tons of those. And we eat some here. I can't eat a lot because of the diabetes, but we eat some and they're tasty. And we give them as presents and things for Christmas and stuff. And they're all really good. But there's more than we know what to do with them. We've got some right now from 2010 that really you have to use soon or it's not going to be any good.
Hmm.
And so today, the producer sent me an article from someone who has invented a recipe for strawberry jam margaritas. It's a very simple recipe using strawberry jam to make tasty, tasty margaritas. And what's more, you blend them in a mason jar because apparently all mason jars, all the standard like mason jars, fit the threading on a blender.
What?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That, and the author of the thing was like, I'm so amazed by this. I don't know if I'm the last one to figure it out. But yeah, you take the blade thing off and you stick it, and you can put it and you can do it in the mason jar. So,
but sweet, how does that work?
Because the blades didn't come off so that you can wash them and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just put it on the thing and the threading matches,
apparently. Oh, I see what you're saying, sure.
They're the same width and the same size threads.
Huh.
So we are going to do that with a lot of the old jam. And I said, like, we should go to the neighbors next week because we won't be recording. We're probably going to see if the neighbors want to do a dinner or whatever. I was like, we should do that with them next week. And she's like, we should do that every time we go over there. She's like, I'm not saying it would work for every flavor, but pretty much all the 2010 stuff should put it in the blender. We'll just and we don't have to drive because they're next door. So we're pretty excited about that. We'll see how that actually goes.
Okay.
So we don't have any apples like that, but we have a lot of other fruits. So that should be tasty.
All right, well, be careful.
Yeah. Oh, please. We're lightweights.
Okay.
Crazy night for us is three drinks.
Okay. I just worry, you know.
Apples. Any other fun things about apples?
I can't think of anything.
I saw Snow White and the Huntsman. That had apples in it.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet it did. Was it any good?
Was better than Dark Shadows.
Well, let's just put the bar on the floor, shall we? Better than Dark Shadows.
Yeah. It wasn't great. If you see it on cable sometime or something, sure. It wasn't awful. But it wasn't great. It had a lot of pretty special effects. It had really sort of gratuitous special effects. They spent a lot of time making things very pretty and magical for no good reason.
What was really the point? I mean,
that does not cost to use the rights to that story is the point.
Well, I mean, in the original story. Actually, as coincidence would have it, I have read the Grimm fairy tale quite recently.
Oh.
And in the version I read...
It is actually a Grimm. Okay, I was wondering.
Well...
I didn't remember...
There's a version in the Grimm collection. And in the translation I read, he wasn't even specifically a huntsman. Nor did the version I read include the deception with the heart or anything like that. Which I've seen in other stories, so the person that the queen sends to, dispatch the young Snow White is, very minor character. And like
yeah.
I said, in the version I read, not even specifically called a huntsman, and the deception with the heart and everything didn't actually happen in the version I read. And also, she was quite young. I didn't know this, but in the Grimm version, at least in the interpretation I read, she was, when she was poisoned with the apple and fell asleep, she was like, I don't know, maybe 9 years old. And that you get the impression that she was in the glass coffin for many, many years and grew.
Even though she was essentially dead.
Sort of.
Yeah.
When she's revived... The bit of apple, apparently she didn't swallow. I think the idea you're supposed to get is she didn't swallow it.
Yeah, that's how I've heard in most versions.
And
yeah.
She spits it out or whatever. And she's not kissed by the prince or anything like that. He just opens up the coffin or... Well, no, I don't remember even if he does that. Somehow or other, he initiates whatever happens so that she spits this...
He hits the reset button.
I don't know what it is. But anyway, so to make a film about her in The Huntsman... I mean, to begin with, seems a little odd, but then, you know, even if the Huntsman's this big character and, you know, oh gosh, I don't want to kill... I mean, was he even sent to kill her, Or was...
Not exactly.
Okay, well, whatever. But you know, she's supposed to be out in the woods, and then she meets the seven dwarves and stuff. Does that just not happen?
Oh, no, there's dwarves.
Okay, so they compress the whole story into kind of an action thing where the huntsman has a more active role throughout the whole thing?
Yes, the huntsman's there the whole of the time.
And is there ever a prince that comes? Is she ever in a glass coffin?
Well, she's never in a glass coffin.
And so the queen, I take it, is eventually vanquished without her having to, you know, be in a coma or whatever.
Okay, people.
All right, don't give anything away.
No.
I just don't understand how you tell this story.
We're going to spoil some shit for a not very good movie based on a story you already know. So skip ahead a little bit if you're worried about this. But I'm going to do it. No, she does actually eat the apple and fall asleep for a little while. There's no glass coffin involved. Mm. It's only for a little while. The whole thing is they altered the backdrop slightly. Not really. They embellished with it. Mm. What happens is we got a king. He's a happy. He has a wife. She's a happy. They have a baby.
Mm.
And she's a Snow White. And she's a lovely. Mm. And we had a thing before. It's because the queen found a rose in the winter and wished she could have a kid that was that awesome as the rose in the winter.
Which is exactly the way the story starts.
And she had the baby, and it's wonderful, and it's great. And then she dies.
That's right, she dies.
And so Snow White's wandering around, very sad, has no mom. She has this friend who hangs out with her, a little boy, who they all do crap together.
Mm.
And then the king is really sad, and then, shit you not, a dark and mysterious army appears at the edge of the kingdom.
Just randomly.
Referred to as Dark and Mysterious Army. Like, the whole thing starts with, like, narration of all this shit, and they say, and seizing the opportunity while the king was sore with grief, a dark and mysterious army appeared.
I see.
And king goes out there, fights the army. The army is just made of a bunch of polished graphite. Like you've seen in the trailers.
Yes.
Like you hit them and they fall. So like they beat the army in like 10 minutes. Not even kidding. Again.
With a bunch of...
like they run out there and they're all just like...
With a bunch of pencil sharpeners?
Basically. Like ball peen hammers. Like it's ridiculous. But they're out there and they find in a wagon there that apparently all the graphite soldiers had captured pretty Charlize Theron.
Oh.
And so they free her. She's, like, shackled up or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And then they take her back. And he falls in love with her, I believe, in literally a day. I believe they say this.
Mm.
Like, falls in love with her, marries her.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Snow White are all being happy.
Mm.
And on the wedding night, Charlize Theron does something nasty to the king that makes him, like, almost dead or whatever. And then she stabs him.
Oh, gracious.
And then she goes to the gate, and she opens the gate, and her brother, with whom she has a very weird relationship, shows up with a totally not made of graphite, but made out of real people army that comes into the castle and takes over the whole place.
Wow.
And she becomes queen. And so, I say this not just to spoil the first 10 minutes of the movie, but to explain, a large chunk of the film has to do with Snow White as... the emblem and the leader, eventually, of what will be the revolution to take back the kingdom.
I see.
It's very much a years have passed, and there's one duke that's holding out against the evilness.
Hmm.
And then Snow White gets involved. And the huntsman is sort of in between. When Snow White escapes, she ends up in the dark forest. And for some reason, the queen can't do her crazy shit in the dark forest. And everybody who goes into the dark forest is, like, crazy.
Wow. Hearing your description of it is so much better, I'm sure, than the film.
The dark forest is full of hallucinogenic mushrooms. Not the kind you eat, but that, like, spray spores at you, and then...
Are you making this
no,
up?
No, and then special effects happen.
No, come on, you're making it up.
No! Comes up more than once. People go into the dark forest, it's kind of spooky, they trip... mushrooms, spray some shit in their face, and then we spend the special effects budget.
You are so making it
No,
up.
Seriously. Weird shit happens in the forest, and it's always from the shrooms. It's not a real thing. But so...
And the queen can't do her magic there because...
Because she says, my powers do not work in the dark forest.
Oh, okay. She just says it. Okay.
To her brother and says, so go... Seriously. That's the line. My powers... cannot extend or cannot be something, basically saying I can't do shit in the dark forest, and nobody goes to the dark forest except one guy, who's a huntsman.
Just perchance.
Yeah, I mean it don't really matter. It could be like it's called Snow White and the Huntsman. Like the story has the huntsman. Like when people say
but he's not hired by the queen.
Yeah.
Oh, he is.
But not. Well, she wants her heart. But frankly, if the local carpenter was the guy who knew how to find things in the dark forest, she would have sent him.
Mm, okay.
Him being a huntsman doesn't matter. But my favorite horrible, horrible bit is they bring him in because he's special. He is special.
The huntsman is?
Yes, Chris Hemsworth, a.k.a. Thor,
yes.
Has fallen low in the world. The huntsman is a drunk bastard. Because his wife died.
Oh.
He had a wife. She died. Mm. And now he seriously just drinks until he gets thrown out of bars.
Mm.
And we see this, in fact.
Or public houses.
Although, if you listen carefully, they say you owe me money for the drink and the girl. So apparently he's not so depressed that he can't still screw whores. But anyway, that's beside the point.
I didn't know depression had anything to do with that ability, but okay.
Well, I'm just saying, your wife died, you're sad, but can still fuck a prostitute. Like, you know?
I suppose.
My dick was consolable. The rest of me is inconsolable, but my dick is consolable. But anyway, here's the thing.
Okay.
So, we send him to the queen, and she's like, you know... You gotta go do this.
Why him, though, if he's such a
drunk? Because he's apparently the only guy who, like, goes to the forest and comes back.
Without hallucinating?
Well, he might while he's there. I don't know. But he comes back.
Fine.
It's only temporary. The shrooms are temporary. It's fine. I haven't told you about the weirder shrooms that show up later. They have eyeballs. Not making that up.
Making it up!
Not making that up either. But I love this because it leads to one of the worst lines ever. He gets there at the castle, and she's like, you need to go find this girl. And I don't even think she says, give me your heart. She needs her heart. The stupid mirror, which plays an incredibly small part in the movie, says, you need her heart. So she's like, okay, go find me this girl. And he's like, why would I do that? I'm a drunk, depressive widower. Why would I do this? And she's like, I'll give you a bunch of money. And he's like, again, drunk, depressive widower, why do I care? And... She says something about his wife, and he's like, don't you talk about her, or whatever. And then she says...
Don't you talk about her.
That's not even where it gets stupid. Because then she says, with her eyes really wide, she looks at him and says, you miss her! I swear to God, like, she just figured out where Carmen Sandiego is. Like, this is a shock. Like, the widower who has been drinking himself to death since his wife died...
And has stated so much to her twice already, supposedly.
Misses his wife.
Revelation.
Yes.
Epiphany.
And so
even.
She uses that, and it goes from there. But...
And then she bargains what? To bring his wife
back?
Oh,
she says she brings his wife back from the dead.
You know, another thing I noticed about the original Snow White, again, at least in the translation that I read, was that the mirror is the only magical thing in the whole story. The queen doesn't work any magic.
Oh, queen works magic all over the fucking place.
Well, I know, in here and in the Disney version, but as far as I can tell, in the original Grimm version, the queen uses deception and costumes and whatnot, but not magic.
No, and actually we have her history, and we find out when she gets her power and stuff and things like that. The mirror, never explained, never nothing.
Well,
it's just the mirror.
Well,
we don't know why.
In the original story, again, that's the only magical thing about it is this mirror talks to her and can tell her who is. I mean, does now, of course, in the original story, the mirror's only real purpose is to assure her that there's nobody more beautiful than her in the whole realm.
Yep.
And that's the case in the film also?
Yes. They actually got a little more intricate there. The whole the Queen's whole thing is tied up in beauty in a much more metaphysical way. Beauty is very key to her power and her being.
So if someone is more beautiful than her, that's a big problem as far as her power.
One could argue that somebody was attempting poorly to do a sort of feminist message in the way we build the Queen, because we do flashbacks to the Queen when she was a kid and stuff and figure out how this came about. Yeah, it's weird.
Because in the original story, it's purely vanity. I mean, there's just
No. It's weird. I don't want to. I'm spoiling the shit out of this. Already,
so. Not really. I mean, you haven't said one thing that makes me think, oh gosh, I wish you hadn't said that.
I'll tell you this though. Much like a recent version of Snow White, Stealthy dies in this one too.
Oh, now why'd you tell me that?
The funny thing is, you think I'm kidding.
I do think you're kidding. There's no Stealthy.
There's not. But there's an extra dwarf who we kill early on, because...
And then there's only seven.
And then there's seven.
Oh, no. There's no way I'm going to watch this movie.
Oh. But, and here's... This is the thing. And I've seen... This is probably the worst grievousness of this ever. When you wish for a child, specifically, like, you wish on your own blood for a child with skin as white as snow, lips as red as blood, and hair as black as a raven's wing. I've also heard hair as black as coal. But the point is black hair, white skin, red lips. And you feel you got that when it comes out. Such that you name the kid Snow White. It should not look like any other Caucasian brunette with pink lipstick on. We have amazing special effects technology like hair dye, makeup, and more than one color of lipstick. And these things can be used to achieve a more Snow White pale effect and black, not brown, hair and red lips. I've seen it done. Both in person and on film. So why... She's a white... I mean, she's a white chick, but she's not white. She's not even particularly gothy white.
No, no.
And her hair is my color.
Yes, that's right.
Like, that one, I'm like... Forget, like, how... Because, like, you can say it's white skin. You know, we're white people, Caucasian. You know, you could argue about that.
Sure.
Black and brown. Different colors. Yeah. Like, entirely different colors. And she's clearly got some lipstick on, because her lips are quite pink. But they're nowhere near red.
Like, nowhere close to red as blood.
You're not... They're not close to red as red. I'm like, you're not... You don't care, movie. Why don't you care? You're already trying to convince me that she's maybe fairer than Charlize Theron.
Oh, here's
ain't true.
Here's another thing I figured out about grim fairy tales in general. Because as you can guess, I've been reading pretty much all of them. Is that none of them... none of them could, on first blush, be woven into a full-length feature film. Not one of them. I don't know,
I find that remarkably easy to believe.
I mean,
you know what else? Not one Philip K. Dick short story can be woven at first blush into a feature film either, goddammit.
Well, and you can see how Disney did it, filling it with a bunch of songs and all kinds of other stuff, and maybe a few action sequences that aren't obviously in the original story, but outside of what Disney did, turning it into a musical and whatever, I mean, turning it into an action film, for example, I can't imagine that could ever work.
There's stuff in this, and the producer said on the way out, like, she feels like this should have been a good movie. She feels like there is a good movie in there, and I think she's right. This movie had some ambitious ideas. It tried to play off a lot of the things that we've built in to Snow White. Now, remember in Disney how all the birds and the animals like love her and totally fall? That sort of is addressed, but still trying to do it in this dark reimagining. It was a very ambitious film, in my opinion. It just didn't do it. And I know the defamation league associated with little people. I don't know which one that is called. Everybody's got a defamation league these days. Is really mad because they didn't use actual little people for this. But I do have to say, the cast for the dwarves, hell of a cast. Nick Frost, Ian McShane, Bob Hoskins, Ray Winstone, like just like seven really good actors that we just made short through the magic of CGI.
Incidentally, the her affinity to forest animals is mentioned in the original story a little
bit. Is it there? Okay.
Just slightly. Like, it just says that wild animals will come up to her and weren't afraid of her and stuff like that. It's not a huge thing, but I thought it was interesting considering people make fun of that in the Disney version about how, you know, she's got birds all land on her finger and she's all nice to the bunnies and stuff. I thought, oh, I didn't realize in the original story they actually kind of made a little mention here. I'll tell you a story that would make a great feature film. In fact, you couldn't get the whole story into it, and that's the original Pinocchio. What a great story. I don't know if you've ever read it.
I have not.
I mean, I haven't read the original either. I've just read a translation of it from the Italian. Yeah. Wow, what a story. It is fantastic. And Disney completely... It's probably the worst... I mean, of all the stories Disney has butchered, I'd say Pinocchio is the worst.
Really?
Yeah, based on when I read it...
Worse than The Little Mermaid.
Oh, well, you got a point there. But the Pinocchio, original Pinocchio story is brilliant. I mean, I like it better than, you know, the original Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland. And I mean, it's very, very good. And it's too bad that more people aren't familiar with it. Now, my understanding is Guillermo del Toro is going to do a film, Pinocchio film, that's
really
supposed to be going along with a little more with the original. And it's going to be set, the original is sort of set, I don't know. It's kind of hard to get a feel for what time period it's set, kind of in fairy tale sort of feel when you read Pinocchio, or maybe more like late 18th century or something. And Del Toro is going to put it, I think, in the 40s. The way he put it is he's going to do it during World War II when people were acting like puppets. But he's still going to try to stick with the original story. I thought of writing a script instead in modern times. Well, maybe one day I'll talk to you about it. But when I read it, I just couldn't stop reading it. I read it on the Gutenberg Project website.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, it was so good. So good. I mean, it was just brilliant. Head and shoulders above lots of other things I've read that are in a similar vein. But the Disney version doesn't do it even a little bit of justice.
As is often the case.
You know, it is. It must be in the late 18th century because some of the characters wear powdered wigs and stuff. Which I don't know when they were doing that in Italy, but of course it was I guess it was all through the 18th century in Europe and in the United States, I guess. I don't remember for sure. But it's really good. I think it's excellent.
Awesome.
Oh, we probably can't draw another one, can we?
We actually cannot.
Wow.
One question, Wanda.
It wasn't even a question. It was one word.
One word that we went nowhere near.
Apples.
Well, you know what Jesse Hyatt says.
Well, thank you, Blood Sparrow, for your one word.
This is an interesting two-subject episode. We basically talked about Wonder Woman and Snow White.
Yep.
All right, well, people, stay tuned. Next week we will have a pre-recorded episode that's actually going to take place just a couple minutes from now, but it'll be exciting for you, and I will talk about my week and roller derby, mostly.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So, have fun.
See you next week to you.
Yes. She's like, you miss her.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Ant Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/j_underberg. Thank you.